南無妙法蓮華経。南無妙法蓮華経。All right, hi everyone. Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. I truly hope this podcast finds you in good health and secure. Meditation. We've all heard that word since we were children. And boy, if there was ever truth to the often quoted line from William Burroughs, that language is a virus from outer space, the word meditation alone would probably be a good example of that. Not that I don't believe he's right, but that's a Buddhist discussion for another day. I grew up around the martial arts long before I started practicing Buddhism as a little kid. And meditation, in quotes, was very much a part of every branch of martial arts that I encountered. Chinese, Japanese, even in different forms, again, quotes, from India, all over the world, whatever martial arts, actual martial arts, not sport martial arts, has taught in the West so much. And even adopted as Wushu in China. But they know that they're adopting martial arts. And after World War II in Japan, everything ending with Do as being a soft version, a sport version. And even to some extent, those schools. But fundamentally, the martial arts included some sort of mind exercise. Oh, and I could hear this video going on and on, even from myself. All of the me's that are listening right now, the martial artist me is going, wait a minute. Of course, mind and body is the whole science of martial arts, right? Not to the sport, but to the truth of martial art. Yeah, it's all about mental development toward some defined form of enlightenment, right? If you don't know this, then you should look into the history of the development of martial arts. A perfect example is the Shaolin in China, learning from a Buddhist, an Indian Buddhist, how to strengthen their core, their sinews, their tendons. Just to bring them strength through Qigong to move the energy in their bodies so that they could meditate with the energy required. So yes, meditation, that word, has every sort of evolution throughout the cultures of the world, right? It's even used as kind of a catch-all, really, in Western countries to mean almost anything involving the mind. And so it both amuses me and confounds me when I hear people using that word to argue with me that I'm not doing whatever correctly, that you can't be a Buddhist unless you're meditating all the time, to which I'm not sure how to respond. Because I'm of the mind, see what I did there? I'm of the mind that whenever a thought goes through your consciousness, that the fact that you're conscious of a thought, and usually there's two or three or four more that you're conscious of, but you decide on one or maybe two. Sometimes I don't think I decide very well. I just blurt them all out. But the point is that that thought is the culmination of a process that you, in our samsaric mind, we're just aware of, that's actually gone through hundreds of thousands of filters in that moment for that one to, for whatever reason, be the loudest and be caught by our consciousness. It's laughable, really, that we think we know what we think. What we can get is a general idea of the predominant tendencies of our thoughts. And as Buddhists, that's what we're chasing, right? In meditation. We're trying to grab the formations of those thoughts. I was looking through several sutras, and over again, no matter what word they use. And the Surangama. Wow. There are mantras in here that you could spend months trying to articulate. This speaks more to what I was talking about chanting in yesterday's video. But there's 554 lines here in this Surangama mantra. I'm not even going to try to read it to you. But let's see, now that's one of my other thoughts that got me off track. The Satipatthana Sutra, all about mantras and chant and meditation. I thought I had the page marked. In Satipatthana, the act of attending to each occasion of experience as it occurs in the moment fixes the mind firmly on the object. What is the object? The continuous attention to the object, even when the object itself is constantly changing, stabilizes the mind in concentration, while the observation of the object in terms of its qualities and characteristics brings into being the insight knowledges. So the object in this is mindfulness. But I bring this up to you because sutra after sutra will talk about how to meditate, and there will always be this object. And it baffles me that those people who start to argue about this don't realize that that's exactly what we're doing when we chant to the mandala. That's the object. Nichiren calls it the maximal object of focus and concentration is the Guanzhen, which is in here in our mind. And he provides us a picture of it to help us get it. That mantra that is Namo Myoho Renge Kyo, the title, the entity of the law, the teachings, the object of our attention, our dedication, our practice. It's no different. People want to treat Nichiren doctrine, Lotus Sutra practicing Buddhists as though we're some kind of kooks. They're the kooks. They don't get it, that this is the ultimate of what they've been. They're so stuck on the words and the teachings of the Hinayana and early provisional Mahayana. They think that sitting there contemplating their navel in the desert or in the forest, wandering like a rhinoceros, alone, in meditation that they will reach enlightenment. Well, you know what? They might, but it's a one in a billion, billion chance. They forget the objective of Buddha. They forget why Siddhartha Gautama enlightened to this universal fact of mind, that he was wanting to find a truth. And you can play with that word truth all day long. I can't find a really good substitute, a universal law that anyone could practice. A baby, an adult, poor, destitute, rich, famous, doesn't matter. If it's a universal truth, law, like gravity, then everyone's equal under that law. No one can defy it. Right? It's universal. That's the point of all of Shakyamuni's teachings. So why would it be special just for you as you wander through the birch trees and sit on a stone? In a way, yeah, this practice, well, and I'm not going to read all these things, you get the point. It's, you know, the formations is the word that I grabbed onto. And I mentioned yesterday another verbiage around it is the going toward, right? He never said in these other sutras that this was the only way, the culminating way, the way to enlightenment. He said this is putting you on the way. This is true of all the sutras, save the Lotus. In the Lotus, he said, this is how I have done it. Emulate what I have done. This is the way for all to attain enlightenment. All of those previous teachings are about getting it through our thick skulls, how our mind conducts our life. This is a very hard thing to teach people, especially thousands of years ago, that it wasn't their craving for food or their craving for sex or their craving for power or their craving for whatever that drove their life. Very, very, very hard to get them to understand at a fundamental level that everything they experience is in the mind. So all of these earlier practices are about teaching how much the mind is in control. And when you get to the Perfection of Wisdom sutras, which are arguably the gestation of the Mahayana thinking, is that you're finally graduating from learning about the mind, like in martial arts, mind controls body, right? You finally graduate to the idea that the mind is something that you can control rather than be controlled by. This is also in the martial arts. It's not unique to Buddhism, but it reaches its maximal nexus in Buddhism. This is why Buddhism is usually so closely tied to many martial arts, albeit not Myoho Rengekyo Buddhism. I think there was quite a shockwave throughout people in the world when the idea that they could modify their own minds to gain an awareness of this experience of being, that it just went into everything. Of course, that's why if that's a limitation of your understanding, that's why far and wide people talk about mind over matter, controlling pain, everything from the mind of the athlete and visualizing and all of that stuff, New Ageness and the self-help books, they all seized on that amazing factor in life. But they're all looking at the finger. They're not looking at the moon. Mind control. How many times have you heard these? They're all, and here it comes, they're all meditations on what it means to have a mind and how one might control it. Nobody asks, well, not nobody, but the popular culture and certainly those who are stuck in earlier teachings, nobody asks, why am I doing this? Oh, they'll have answers, so I can run faster, so I don't feel pain so easily, so I can control my ingestion of food, retrain my mind to eat better, retrain my mind to not get into relationships with jerks like that, retrain my mind to feel better about myself. Yeah, those are all great exercises. But you're not, you're cutting it off before it even gets started. All of that is attachments. It's samsara. It's ego. You've forgotten, you meditators, that the purpose of all this is to release yourself from all that stuff, to be unaffected by it. If you read a book, and I don't care if it's, I don't care if it's Roger Penrose's Cycles of Time, and you learn about the conformal cyclical cosmos, cosmology, or if it's Doug Adams's Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. I don't care what it is. That is a meditation, is it not? So that's why it's confounding, isn't it? Because the guy who emails me and he says, you keep saying study and practice are the three pillars of practice, right? Study, practice, resolute mind. Develop a resolute, single-mindedly desiring to see the Buddha. Right? Daimoku, instantiation of the Buddha mind. And they will email me and they'll say, it's not study. Study's not important. Meditation. Buddhism is all about meditation. Meditation is nothing but Buddhism. If you're not meditating, then you're not Buddhist. I just heard that somebody tell me that about a teacher they used to chant with. Told them that. Well, if you're not meditating, you're not Buddhist. Okay. To that person, I would like to ask, what do you think meditation is? Every moment, every thought moment of your life, you're meditating. The problem is what your meditation is focused on. That's the issue. So meditation for me has become a not word, meaningless. unless it's used in an argument to tell me that that supersedes study. To which I simply respond, how did you learn to meditate? Did you not read something, hear something, see something? How do you construct your idea of meditation with absolutely no instruction or even idea? That's study, my friends. Life is study. What are you going to do with what you're learning? What you're inculcating as knowledge? What are you doing with it? Isn't that the point? What? When we recite, sing a song, is that not a meditation? Does the poet not sit down with the idea of investigating an idea? Isn't that a meditation? So, my friends, the question is not how important meditation is or whether or not you're doing it right. The question is, what's your object? What's your objective? Where are you going with all of this? Are you tramping along, entertaining yourself in misery? Are you just attaching yourself to another habit? I do this so I'm better. Good for you. How, you know, and from this grows a lot of confusion. People think, see, if you grow up in a religious nation, which where is there not? I suppose you could say Bhutan isn't a religious nation, although they do things religiously. Here's another word we can take a powder all day long, right? Religion. Anyway. Most of us are taught that we need to somehow immolate ourselves. Right? We should be selfless. A lot of Buddhists think that too. So I'm going to ask all of you Christians and Muslims and Jews and Buddhists and Jains and on and on and on and on and on. How are you truly going to help even one other human being if you yourself are cut off at the knees, are not there, are valueless? How? How, if you immolate yourself, and look up that word because you'll be shocked at what it means. How, by immolating yourself, are you helping another person? And yes, I'm also talking to all you Theravadas who want to go burn yourselves up in the middle of the street. How heinous and stupid is that? That's not Buddhism at all. How can you be a bodhisattva to lead others to their practice of their own enlightenment if you're not there? But you have to give of yourself. Yes, of yourself. But if there's no yourself, then you're not giving anything. You're just vapor. You're just meaningless. That's what selfless is. I'm not here. You go. Bye. That's not bodhisattva. That's immolation. That's this guy. Don't emulate that. That's not living. That's not Buddha way. That's not expressing your maximal potential. Does this not make sense? I hope you don't think I'm pointing the finger at you individually. But I'm pointing out these individuals. And all of us were guilty at some point of adopting the rhetoric, because everybody's saying it. When we engage our minds, we are meditating. However, the Buddha's lesson in how to do that for ultimate security, happiness, I hate that word, but our liberation from stress, anxiety, that we understand. How do we get to that life condition where we're, simply because we orient things up and down, side to side, above that suffering, that pain, that endurance, right? Because everything arises from the very get-go, right? This entire universe arises. And then there's this period of endurance. And that endurance is a great word, because endurance implies difficulty. That's why life equals stress and anxiety. Right? And eventually, all things decay in that endurance, because it beats it down. And at the end of the decay, there is an end. There is, poof, extinguishment. Extinction. Right? You never walk out of your house, look around, where's Tyrannosaurus Rex? It's extinct. Okay? There's a beginning, an instantiation, an entire process. Then once something is manifested of that process, it endures for a while as it decays, and then boop, extinguishment. So, if you don't want to embody the endurance, and you're not ready for boop, extinguishment, what do you do while you're enduring? Can you make that endurance a pleasant, honorable, valuable thing? And my friends, whether you call it meditation or singing or chanting or recitation, those are all meditations. They're all harnessing the mind. But remember the goal. To liberate ourselves, to release ourselves from the endurance aspect of being here and flip it into a wonderful experience of endurance. That's Buddhism. That's the Buddha way. That's being a bodhisattva. While I'm here, ta-da! This divides, in Buddhist scholarship, those who would chase after that monkey control strictly for themselves. Now look at what I did with my hands. If you believe that enlightenment is something you need to achieve solely for yourself, Is that not absolutely contradictory to all of the teachings of Buddha? If you're doing it for yourself, then how attached are you to that self? Again, I can go to these mindful meditations, meditations on the breath and breathing, all of those early explorations into how to gain insight into how your mind controls your body, not how to gain enlightenment, how to move toward that goal, Lotus Sutra. In the meantime, just get how your mind works. That's what that's about. But that's all in supplicants to ego, because that's the first hurdle to get through in the mind, the ego. How much more glued to yourself and samsara could you be than to have the incredibly arrogant state of mind that everything you do is in service to your ego? That's not Buddhism. What are you doing? I'm being adamant here because, for crying out loud, how many hundreds and thousands of Buddhists are there in the world today practicing this malarkey? Get over it already. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's a form of oppressed welfare for countries that are, you know, like Burma. What are you doing? I mean, thousands and thousands of people, the culture as well as the monks, have this solely distorted idea, and it's so egotistical. How could it be even called Buddhism? Maybe 2,000 years ago, I could see they hadn't gotten it yet. I'm trying to be generous. I'm trying to be understanding here. But oh my goodness. Study. If you study the scholarship of Buddhism as Shakyamuni told you to, you wouldn't be stuck there. You've decided, those people, not you, to stunt your growth. No, I'm not reading anything else but this. My teacher told me. No, it's all here. Now look at you. Suffering, misery, war. I mean, war on a country level and on a personal level. Rape is an act of war. It's disgusting. But I digress. I simply mean to illustrate that words are very, very provisional. They're only meaningful when you understand their meaning. But people will apply meaning into things to their own designs. Ego. Self. Right? So I would say be wary of those who bandy around the word meditation as though it was some sword of justification. I wouldn't even use it. When I do use it, I talk about active meditation. I'm trying to figure out some combination of words that will shift the thinking around what we're trying to do. When we sing Namo Myoho Renge Kyo, we are establishing a position of mind. I open my mind, na, moo to be like a funnel. Just drop this wisdom into my mind. What wisdom? Myoho Renge Kyo. The attainment, the awakening, the enlightenment of my mind, so that through that portal of mind, I can be released from the attachment to the endurance of this samsaric life. And with that detachment, I can see clearly what is affecting what. What is influencing what. And I cease to be influenced by it. When I see that, I don't go, ha, and lose my mind. It's in our language. Right? So meditation. To recap, where are we time-wise? Yeah. Every thought that goes on in our mind is the product of a vast process, so that the little bit of a clue we get from the thoughts going through our mind are just illustrative of tendencies and conditions. Thinking about that is a meditation. Taking that to this mandala of our Gohonzon, our open portal to Buddha, focusing our eyes, ears, mouths, bodies on Namo Myoho Renge Kyo, Namo Myoho Renge Kyo, and staring at that mandala, we enliven. You could see it as an illustration of here's endurance, here's the whole planet with this layer of endurance, and Namo Myoho Renge Kyo, Namo Myoho Renge, we get above that inversion layer of smog. And we begin, albeit there's still a layer we need to look through, we're no longer coughing because we're not in it. And we can breathe fully. And we can look around. And we can see with our minds, not with our eyes, clearly where the winds are pushing this stuff around, what it's truly like without responding, reacting, and with compassion, which grows from seeing the real picture, understanding that everyone's existing within their endurance. No wonder there's so much reaction. We need to pluck one and here and there and go, look, you don't have to do this. You can rise above that smog layer and see clearly. You can release yourself from that endurance, right? You don't need to be the Baja buggy of life in that dust, dirt, bouncing around, rolling over. You can be the hovering craft in the air watching it. And with that comes more profound understanding of what's actually happening. What even the smog is. And you will become a much more expansive person. Because your life, instead of being endurance all the time, will suddenly be open to a breath, a real breath. And you'll overwhelmingly want to take other people into that space with you. It hurts to watch suffering. It is suffering to watch suffering. Don't you want to make everything... Look how bright and sunny it is out. Well, maybe it's raining where you are, but even so, look at the beauty of the rain. There's so much... there's more than you can experience going on in samsara that is so amazing that in a way, not working toward our enlightenment is to be piddling around in the crap of life. And there's so much more to life than the crap. Wouldn't you rather not experience that? I'm not going to say it again. Right? The decay, the suffering, the pain, the anxiety, the stress. I don't see why anybody wouldn't want to rise above that. But for most people, the greatest obstacle is all this misunderstanding of what it is we're doing. And I think you understand that my whole mission in these lessons, these talks, these videos, is to give you words to use in your own way that are demystified, that relate to our friends, our contemporaneous society. Because using the old words, like meditation, and the old words today, they come with a stench. People don't want to hear them because there's so much conflicting stupidity around them that when you mention it, even if you say, hey, I'm a Buddhist, you ought to, oh, wait. Ooh, yeah, I see what's happening in Burma. I see what, oh, stink. Yeah, I don't want that. So I don't want to use those words until somebody's at least in the flow of learning about what Buddhism really is. So help your friends, your relatives, those you can teach who are in your environment, and believe me, they'll come out of the woodwork. When you start doing it right for your enlightenment, your bodhisattva expression, experience in samsara, in this life, people will come out of the woodwork, not necessarily in bunches. If they do, let me know. We need to talk. But usually there'll be somebody you may not even know. It's happened to me so many times. They'll approach me in a store, in a market or whatever, and they'll start asking me, and they don't know who I am. They don't, hey, there's the Buddhist. Let me ask him a question. No, I wish it was that easy. They'll come up and they'll start talking about their life. They just vomit their life in front of me. Why me? Why are you just dumping on me? Oh, what they don't know, they're asking me how to practice Buddhism. They just don't know that that's what they're asking me. So I need to be compassionate here and listen to them, hear them. And maybe don't try to fix them on the spot. I mean, some people are so admired in so much of what they're doing that I've actually told them, have you ever heard of Myoho Rengekyo? What? Suddenly they stop. Oh man, if there was ever a sign that they were ready. Yeah, say it with me. Don't tell them it's a Buddhist chant. Say it with me. Namu, namu. And pay attention to which words comes out clearly and which of the characters they mispronounce. Because that can be a big clue as to what area of their lives they're suffering with. But a lot of times they'll say it perfectly. It might knock you down. You know, wow, you are so ready. What? I can have something? How much does it cost? Right? No, listen, if you want to know more about it, it's a way for you to be less affected by the crap of life, by the stuff that stresses you out, that makes you anxious. Oh, it's a meditation. Nah. It's a practice. It's a practice. Listen, if you want to know more about it, here's a phone number. Here's my email. Get a hold of me. I'll give you some more information. and I'll help you. That's all they need to hear. Don't start getting into, I can teach them about the demons and Dairaku Tenno Mao and the Buddhist group that I belong to, or da da da. Give them something to desire. And then wait. They may never contact you. That's okay. You planted the seed. They may contact you 2 years later. You won't even know who they are. But you don't have to know who they are. The minute they contact you, they say, "It's so great to hear from you. How can I be of help?" Well, I want to know more. Let them construct the questions. Don't try to answer everything, because you're going to answer what you know, what you need. You need to know what they need. Bodhisattva, listen, take note, help them where you can, but don't force them to learn, because they won't. They need to seek learning out for themselves. Be like Shakyamuni. Give morsels until they learn and teach themselves, to the point where they want to know more about it. Maybe I should come over. I'd like to talk to you face to face. Make sure it's not about sex. We're clever that way, aren't we? Direct them to the videos. Podcasts, just oral, so there's no visual stigmas. Or hopefully at some point, why don't you come over and chant with me for a few minutes and see how it feels for you. Chanting? That, remember the Namu Myoho Renge Kyo thing? Oh, yeah. Yeah, just keep saying that and repeating that to yourself. You can do it in your head. You don't have to do it out loud. And see how you feel. And if you're curious about it, then come on over, call me, I'll give you directions, and we'll spend a few minutes and we can talk. Be very easy about bodhisattva work. And that ease will turn into great benefit for your own mind, as well as sifting out the needs of others, so that you help, you assist to their capacity, not to yours. Do you understand? All right, I hope that was all useful information. I've gone on a long time, blah, blah, blah. I thought this was going to be a short video. I don't know myself very well, do I? Okay, all right. As always, thank you. Keep practicing. Be mindful of your health and the health of others. Be kind, and I'll see you in the next one. Bye for now.